Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
Thanks to Superintendent Ryan Walters, it may be time for Oklahoma to establish a new category of state record. Barely 7 full months into his first term, Walters already has been named a defendant or respondent in 7 lawsuits. That's 7 lawsuits that taxpayers may well be on the hook to provide his legal assistance. I've been covering Oklahoma government and politics across most of 5 decades, and I can't recall anything even close to this. And what should we call it? This performance? Of course, it's performance politics that's trumping, and that's a pun intended, education policy at the State Department these days. Few would know better what's been happening inside Walter's world than former State Department school counselor specialist Janessa Boynty, who was fired in March for having the temerity to speak as a parent at her children's school board meeting in Edmond, urging that board to bolster its mental health programs and apply for federal grants for related training. Boynty and her attorney, Leah Roper, join us for this week's ObserverCast to discuss the wrongful termination lawsuit and to give us a glimpse inside what's really happening at the Oklahoma State Department of Education. So we'd like to start by asking you to introduce yourselves. And Leah, you're here with us, and Janessa's going to join us here momentarily. So tell us who you are and who you are affiliated with.
Sure. My name is Leah Roper. I'm the managing attorney at the Center for Employment Law, and I have the privilege of representing Janessa Boynty on her claims against the State Department of Education and Ryan Walters.
So can you kind of give us a synopsis for people who don't follow these things as closely as we tend to? What happened here? And what was the fallout from her appearance before the Edmond School Board?
Sure. So just very broad strokes, the lawsuit that we've brought is about free speech. It's Ms. Boynty went to the school board meeting as a parent of her children to speak about an issue that was super important and remains super important at the time, student mental health. She talked about resources that are available, things that the school could do that some cost money, some don't, to help students, because this was in the wake of a very tragic death of one of their students from complications of suicide. And so Janessa was not the only person who spoke at that school board meeting. The school board meeting was later aired by a news channel, and the news channel credited Janessa as a concerned parent and aired some of her comments specifically during the meeting. And then 3 days later, Janessa is fired at work. And the primary reasons they gave for firing her from the State Department was that at the school board meeting, she violated their policies and therefore was going to be let go from her job. So Janessa's speech as a private individual on a matter of substantial public concern apparently cost her her livelihood.
So what policies exactly?
I'm sorry, Arnold. Did they say specifically?
No, that's where I was going.
Violated? Yeah.
Let me pull this up so I can say it verbatim. So they gave 3 reasons for terminating Janessa, and we kind of disagree with all 3. So the first reason was a breach of her confidentiality agreement. The second reason was a violation of the OSDE media policy. And the third reason was improper use of time and leave. So that's just the bullets at the very top of it. The first 2 specifically mention her comments at the school board meeting as the basis for them being there.
So how does that breach State Department confidentiality when you're talking as a parent and you're not She wasn't identifying herself as somebody from the State Department of Education who was there.
And more importantly, she wasn't identifying students with name and dates of birth and school sites.
So we have a copy of her personnel file, well, the parts that they were willing to give her. The state doesn't have to give you everything out of your personnel file, so they did not provide the disciplinary documentation or anything from her employment. But we did get her signed policies and procedures, her performance management stuff. So the confidentiality agreement is one of the documents that she did sign after Mr. Walters started, I believe. And it specifically talks about what is confidential information. And the answer is that she didn't use any. Everything that she spoke about at the school board meeting is publicly available. She cited her sources at the meeting that were public and not confidential. In fact, she didn't even use any information from the state at all when she was making her comments.
And she brought nothing of her professional work other than being a, you know, a mental health professional to the podium when she spoke to the school board as a parent.
So she introduced herself as a parent of several students that have been through the school system, as a prior counselor with the school system, and she named the schools. And she said, now I work for the state in the student services division. And that's all she said about it at all. And then she went into the specifics of what she was hoping that they would consider implementing in their school and things that they can use to help their students. So that's all she ever said as far as being affiliated with the state at all or her job. She didn't explain her job with the state. She was really just trying to give her employment law or her employment background to establish that she knows what she's talking about when she's giving these statistics and data. Hopefully that they would, you know, take her recommendations or at least consider them stronger, because they were hearing from a lot of people that night.
So what's the violation of the state of the State Department of Education's media policy? I mean, she was not granting a media interview. She was just simply speaking in a public forum as a private citizen.
So you'd have to ask them, in my opinion, on that one. We don't have a copy of the media policy still to date. We tried to find it online, couldn't find it. She's asked others that were still in the department at the time for it. We haven't found it. So I don't know what the policy actually says.
Or if one exists.
I assume it does. Her termination document does have a quote from the policy on it. I'll read that if you'd like me to.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
So what the termination document says is the OSDE media policy states any unauthorized individual who makes public comments or addresses the media as an apparent representative of the OSDE may be subject to discipline up to and including termination.
An apparent employee of OSDE.
That's what they seem to have decided. The thing on that one for us is she didn't even know that the meeting was being recorded. She didn't know that there was media there. She didn't do an interview with any of the media. And she did not state she was speaking as a representative of the OSDE at all. That was never part of the conversation. In fact, we later, like in the conversation or on the letter, in the letter, it says the agency has been contacted by external stakeholders asking if OSDE supported your comments made at the board meeting. So I have to assume that's how the state found out about her speaking, or maybe they saw the article. I don't know. But to me, them putting this in the document says whoever asked that question did not credit those statements to the state, because they're asking if the state agrees with them. So
I'm assuming that you all will attempt to find out who the stakeholders were, because we know, and you do too, I'm sure, that school board meetings have become flashpoints for people, many of whom don't have any students in whatever district they're wailing about at these meetings. But they just raise a ruckus at a lot of these meetings. And I can see some who attend the Edmond school board meetings, you know, getting their feathers and a ruffle over, you know, something like that that was said, and needing, feeling the need to report to the state superintendent.
It's certainly a question I intend to ask is, you know, what did they know at the time they're making this decision? What investigation did they do at the time? I have many questions to follow up on this. Absolutely.
I mean, what record do they have of stakeholders contacting them to lodge this complaint or this concern?
Great question.
Today, well, stakeholder in effect could be anybody in the state of Oklahoma who's a taxpayer, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be anybody affiliated with Edmond Schools or anything like that.
But you think if it was a phone call or if it was an email,
well,
they should have record of it.
So far, they haven't given us really, they haven't responded to anything. They haven't had to be fair. There's no requirement to this point that the state has had to answer what we've notified them about. But we have not yet received any of those responses or any of that information. The lawsuit has just been filed, so we haven't even yet been able to make those requests, but that's certainly coming up soon in the process.
Okay. Janessa has joined us, I think.
I'm so sorry about that. Ooh. I have ADD and I was like doing something and I was like, oh, there's something I'm forgetting, even though it was in my calendar. So I really apologize.
No, but I'm a little concerned. You're not actually driving right now, are you?
I am stopping right now is what I'm doing.
All right.
But I'm talking to you. I'm not looking at you. It's like being on speakerphone.
Right. Okay. Well, yes, with safe drive. I mean, we don't want anything to happen.
I'm driving safely. I'm pulling into the on queue right now. Thank you. Sorry.
Well, we were sort of just getting started here, and Leah's already kind of given us her background and told us and kind of set the stage for a lot of the discussion here, but. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background and so that, you know, they'll have a better feel and understanding for who you are and your family and that sort of thing?
Sure. Yeah. So I've worked in public education for 18 years and I was a school counselor I'm actually a school counselor now. I've taken a position again as a school counselor. It's my 11th year as a school counselor. And a few years ago, I have a friend and a colleague that was working at the State Department of Education, and she told me about the Project Aware grant that had just been awarded to Oklahoma. And she told me about a position available at the state. And she was like, I think you would be really great for this job. And so I applied and interviewed, and I was selected to start that job. And so I started with Project Aware in December of 2020. And I was assigned to work with Ada, Atoka, and Shakota Public Schools to help administer pieces of this grant that existed to improve mental health supports and resources for these districts and to support the students and teachers and communities through this grant. And so I worked with school counselors and teachers. I provided a lot of training for them and resources. I helped them build. And it just puts systems in place to help identify students that might need some mental health support and behavior support, things like that. So that's the work that I did for 2.5 years. And then when there was a student in my own community where my kids go to school, so I have 4 kids that have been in Edmond Public Schools. My oldest son graduated from Edmond Santa Fe in 2020. His high school during that year, 2 of his classmates died by suicide. And then I have 3 other kids that are still in the Edmond School District. He's off and he's in college now. But earlier this year, there was a young man who was a freshman at Edmond Santa Fe who died by suicide. His mom had posted a story on Facebook and talked about how he'd been on the baseball team and there was some bullying and hazing that had occurred. Everything that I know, and even I'm a suicide prevention educator, things like that. I've been on the state crisis response team where I've responded to different tragedies in our state, helping provide support to the teachers and schools and things like that. I just really feel like this young man's life could have been saved if there were some better prevention efforts in place and some better systems in place to provide support. And so I've just felt really compelled to speak at my local school board meeting because I wanted to bring some current data statistics to them that related to student mental health. Currently in the United States, the number one cause of death for 14 and 15 year olds is suicide. And so I wanted to shed some light on those statistics and those reports. And then I also had some resources that I wanted to share with them that could be taken advantage of for free that didn't cost anything that they could choose to utilize in the school district, just to help improve prevention efforts and improve just overall mental health and mental wellness for students, for teachers, parent education, even just to help save some kids' lives. Really, that was my goal of speaking at the school board meeting. I just wanted to connect them with some information that could help save kids' lives. And then after speaking for 2 minutes at that school board meeting, a couple days later, I got fired from my job for it. And I was shocked that in doing something that I felt like was just so needed, and I got so much positive feedback from parents and people that I used to work with in the school district, my own kids' teachers, you know, "I'm so proud of you. Thank you for speaking." One person even said, "You're a hero for the children." And then, I mean, to be fired for doing something like that, I was just shocked. And anyone that I've spoken to over the last few months, they're kind of shocked and they can't believe it either. Cause I mean, no one, everyone said like, "You didn't do anything wrong." And I'm like, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. And so that's kind of what happened. That's where we're at.
So what do you think's really happening here?
I think that our new state superintendent has his own agenda, and as much as he talks about, you know, indoctrination and things like that, I really think he has his own kind of type of indoctrination that he's trying to push onto public schools. It seems like in the department when I worked there, if you did not align with his points of view and if you did not align with his goals, you weren't going to last very long. And even though my job in the State Department of Education was to support, you know, mental health, and that's what I spoke about, you know, in my private capacity, the school board meeting, that's what got me fired. And so it didn't seem like that was something that he supported very much. And over the last few months, it's been very unfortunate that we have lost so many amazing champions for public education that have chosen to resign from their positions at the State Department of Education because our schools still need support. And there are not people at the State Department of Ed, you know, in these leadership positions to provide that support for schools anymore.
So what is the harm for connecting a school district to additional resources? Am I correct that this the grant that you were working on, that was something that the previous administration had started during COVID, right? Like, yes. That was like the counselor corps thing?
Well, the counselor corps is a separate grant, and I was super thankful for that one too. But Project Aware, actually, the first Project Aware grant has started in 2018, and it started in the western part of the state with Woodward, Weatherford, and Elk City. They were the first three school districts in Oklahoma to receive that, and we referred to them as Project Aware West. And then it went so well, we got so much, I mean, great data, because everything in education that we should be doing should be data-driven, and we should be using evidence-based practices, taking a data-driven approach to, you know, guide the work that we do. And so we got such great data. I mean, office discipline referrals had been reduced. Attendance rates had increased. Test scores had increased. GPAs had increased. Teachers are reporting to be happier in the school building. And so, you know, it went so well. And then SAMHSA, the agency that provides this funding, another round of grants came out. And so Cheryl McGee, who was, you know, was the first person to be the project manager for that grant, She wrote a grant with the help of Terry Grissom, a former State Department of Education employee, and they got awarded Project Aware East. And so that's when I came on board. And then just last year, Project Aware South came on board, and that's Davis, Sulphur, and Lawton. And so we continue to see such wonderful results with this grant, and we're getting such a great return for the investment that we're getting with these grant funds. And even SAMHSA, I mean, they wouldn't keep awarding us these grants if we weren't getting good results. And so they've, I mean, these grants, I think it's over $27 million that's been given to the state of Oklahoma specifically for those three grants. And so, and it might be more, that number might be off, but that's money that our state isn't setting aside to invest in, you know, mental health in schools. And that's money that's done some amazing things in our state to support schools and students. And I honestly think, like, the work that I've seen personally with the three districts I worked with, I know that we have saved some lives. I know that we have, because I was working with those people and they were telling me these stories and these kids that were in crisis, but they have systems in place now, and they have procedures in place, and they have tools and resources to better support the needs of students. And I mean, I know that there are kids' lives that have been saved because of this work that we're doing.
Now,
so yeah, there's nothing wrong with what we've been doing. I don't see anything. I have nothing negative to report from the work that we've done.
So it sounds to me like this grant specifically, this work specifically impacted our rural schools.
Absolutely. So part of the criteria for this grant is that you had to choose three school districts that had been identified as mental health deserts, meaning that I know that in the western part of the state, there was like one clinician per 250,000 people. And so part of this grant hired more school counselors, hired more licensed mental health professionals for the school district in order to be able to provide those services for students in need. And then, yeah, so Joy Hoffmeister, she chose to use, you know, funds to bring along the school counselor corps, because we have a school counselor shortage in the state of Oklahoma. And so some of those districts that I served in, even I was even able to say, hey, you guys go out and apply for this. There was one district I worked with, they had one school counselor for K through 12. And I mean, a lot of the times they were doing administrative work that wasn't even, part of the job description of what a school counselor should be doing. And now this school district, they have a counselor in each building. They have an elementary, middle, and a high school counselor because of the school counselor corps. And so they're there, they're able to support the needs of students. They're able to work with teachers, providing some coaching on how to help, you know, with strong behaviors that we're seeing, things like that. And again, I mean, all the work that we're doing, I mean, ultimately it creates a more happy, like, work environment, school climate, kids are happier, teachers are happier. You know, it's just a never-ending cycle of goodness.
I mean, really a win-win situation.
Oh, absolutely. It's not costing our schools anything.
Yeah, and like in a state, well, see, and that's the other piece. It's not, I mean, these are federal dollars. These aren't having to come from the state coffers. These are federal dollars.
Right. Exactly.
You know, data-driven, like you said, I'm just thinking, I as a general rule, I don't ask myself why about crazy people. And by crazy, I mean malicious people, right? Like I shouldn't use the word crazy to apply to this. I don't ask the why for mean and malicious people. However, I'm just like, is this because this was like a tangible example of a previous superintendent's good work? That I doubt you were out there like, you know, this was Joy Hoffmeister, do this because Joy Hoffmeister. You were just like, this is an opportunity.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity that will help all of our kids. Let's do this.
And I mean, I also believe see a need, meet a need. And any responsible leader, that's what they do. And you can put your own political and personal viewpoints aside. because we have a responsibility to meet the needs of our students, whether that be academically, emotionally, personally.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just coincidentally, it is suicide prevention, suicide awareness month right now. So September, September. So, but I mean, just to know that it's such a mental health is such a dire need. We have such poor outcomes. You know, we die for our people die from death from despair. Right. I mean, at rates that are just astronomical compared to other places. And then, you know, the fact that you were trying to save kids' lives. Yeah.
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 So you sort of indicated that, people who weren't on board with the superintendent's worldview knew they probably weren't long for the State Department. How did people know they weren't aligned? I know you know as an individual whether you are or aren't aligned with some of the stuff that he's been saying.
Yeah, what were the signs? Like, what was happening?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you watch his Twitter videos, I mean, that's a pretty good indication. He's so vocal and he's so, you know, he's been very clear about kind of what his own personal mission has been. And so he's really politicized public education in a way that's not necessary, because doing what's best for kids really doesn't have to or need to be political. When you let people who are professionals in the field and leaders in the field and, you know, do the work that needs to be done. Again, if you're taking a data-driven approach and things like that and using evidence-based practices, you don't really have to worry a whole lot about the work they're doing, because that'll report back to you and you'll see it. You know, the numbers won't lie. So it was very easy to see kind of, ooh, Does our current leader kind of have the values of someone that I stand for? Do their values kind of mirror some of my own and the reason I'm in education? And, you know, kind of what's my why? What's his why? And it was super easy to know, yeah, this isn't going to work out for me. And so many people didn't want to be in my position where they do the wrong thing or send the wrong email or say the wrong thing in support of the work that we should be doing and then have their head on the chopping block next. And in some of the resignation emails that I've read from some of my former colleagues, that's exactly what they've said. You know, your values no longer align with mine when it comes to public education. And so I'm going to seek out different opportunities, you know, things like that.
So were there, I mean, it wasn't like he came into your department and asked for a show of hands.
Oh, no.
It's a situation where you can sort of tell from your work.
Well, and even his campaign.
Well, I know, but what I'm getting at is, you know, you're doing your job.
Right.
I'm assuming. And the mere fact that you're doing your job doesn't align with his views based on his carpool karaoke stuff. I mean,
well, you know, and some of the guidance that we got, so one of the former grant writers at the State Department of Education, once he came on board, you know, she was given very specific guidance on what grants to apply for, what grants to not apply for, you know, and when she was specifically told no grants that have anything to do with social emotional wellness, no grants that have anything to do with mental health, things like that, nothing that supports our LGBTQIA community, you know what I mean? That was in writing. That was sent to her in writing. And so that, I mean, tells you a lot about kind of where he stands. And, you know, in public education, we have to support the needs of all students. It's our responsibility to support the needs of all kinds of students, not just the white Christian students that come from, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Households that make $100,000 a year or more. I mean, we have a very diverse population that we serve, and regardless of what your own political views are, it's our job to meet their needs.
So you knew everybody in your department, their heads were on the chopping block, because this is not something that he believes in or thinks ought to be a mission of the State Department of Education.
No, and he's made it very clear, you know, that fund, you know, we just need to be focusing on academics, academics, academics. And we all know that. But we also know, and if he would look at the research, it tells a story that when you support student mental health and you have improved mental health, you have improved academic outcomes as well.
But if you're only, but if you're only interested in your political career, your individual political career, if you're such a narcissist, it really doesn't matter to you about the kids, even though he, of course, tells us all the time that he's all about the kids.
No, no. It's, I mean, his actions don't align with what he's saying, though. If you were about the kids, you could put your own personal, you know, opinions aside and viewpoints aside, because you would see what's best and what needs to be done, again, based on data, because it tells a story, and we can use that story to guide our actions and how we meet the needs of students in public education.
So were you sort of the first example in the department that he made?
I think so. Yeah. I believe I was the first one terminated. Yeah. So.
And what's happened since in the department?
Like people have left. Like there's not a lot of people that are still there. And it's so sad because when Joy Hoffmeister was there, whenever there was a student support, there's still a student support department, but when she first started out, I think there were like a couple of people, two people in that department. And then with the grants that were written and things like that, that department grew to over 30 people. And there were school climate transformation grants that were happening that were impacting so many schools across the state. And then of course there was Project Aware, and then there was the school counselor core grants. And so only two people were still funded by the state. Everyone else in that department, there are, as salaries were funded by those federal grant monies. And so we were doing work in our state with money that was given to us to do this work. And we were doing amazing things, and schools were having wonderful outcomes. And then you have, you know, the change in leadership, and then, you know, it doesn't take long. He's only been in office 9 months. In 9 months, besides the people that have been fired, a lot of other folks have said, I can't work here anymore. I'm gonna leave. And so all of that wonderful work that was done over the years through, you know, Joy Hoffmeister's leadership, it's dismantled. It's gone. I mean, he has scared people out of wanting to stay there and do that work, because like me, I mean, we all have families to support. You know, we do this job because we're passionate, but we also have to be practical, and we have our own personal needs to meet, you know? And so instead of being fired or waiting for them to send the wrong email or say the wrong thing or something like that, they just chose to resign. So I think there might be 10 people left, maybe less, but there's not 30 how many school districts? We have like over like what, 500 school districts in 77 counties because of all the little rural tiny ones and stuff. So
can you imagine if he got it in his feeble mind that there was Chinese money involved in this? I mean, I could just see him really just losing his mind over this. It's bad enough that it's woke liberal ideology that we're talking about here. Kids need to just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, right?
You know, and some kids don't have bootstraps. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's time to do away with that myth of the bootstraps, isn't it?
Yeah, there are kids that don't have bootstraps, so we got to do better.
Well, so what's, I guess the most important thing here, in a sense, you fortunately have landed back on your feet, so to speak, you know, from a personal standpoint, I guess.
I mean, my life is different. I mean, but yeah, I didn't even apply for the job that I found. The principal found my resume somewhere and reached out, and it's been a really good fit for me. I have a really great counseling team and great administration, and working directly with kids every day has been really, really good for me. It's been very healing and helping me kind of restore, you know, some damage that was done emotionally over the last few months. But there was period of time my own mental health like wasn't great, and I had to really like hone in and take care of myself and lean on my, you know, circle of support and things like that. But I'm super happy where I'm at now. It's the healthiest school building I've ever been in, and it feels good to do this work. But my life is different now. I mean, I don't have insurance for my kids and my husband anymore because I can't afford it when you're at a public school, as opposed to when you work for the state. So, you know, decisions have to be made and things like that. So,
sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to sort of minimize, obviously, what you're going through, but what I was thinking about is, you know, we have a mental health crisis that is disproportionately affecting children, it seems to me.
Yeah.
What's happening to the kids out there? If we don't have anybody who is accessing and putting to good use these out-of-state dollars coming in, the opportunities to do good things that have obviously had demonstrably, you know, provable results.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening to those kids? That crisis has not gone away.
Exactly. And that's why it's really irresponsible to act in a way as such to villainize people that are trying to do this good work to try to save the lives of kids and improve those mental health outcomes that will lead to, you know, those academic performance measures that he's so concerned about. But yeah, I mean, even just since I've started my job, we've had a handful of kids in the last few weeks that have come to us that are having some thoughts of self-harm. And so we have to follow those procedures and contact parents and connect them with, you know, services and make sure they get evaluations and get the support that they need. And I mean, every week there's at least two. I mean, and those are just the kids that we know about. There are kids that deal with this on their own that, you know, they're not going to reach out and say, hey, I'm struggling. Hey, I need some help. These are the kids that, you know, have the strength to come to us and tell us, hey, I need some help, you know? And again, in the school counselor corps, you know, when this money runs out, some of these districts might not have the funds to continue to employ them. And what's scary is those kids have come to know these school counselors, and that's their person they go to. And when that person's not there, what do they do? Who do they go to?
Yeah.
Well, so Leah, how does this go forward in the legal system?
Legally, we're kind of in the very beginning of the process. We're currently serving, which is providing the formal notice of the lawsuit to the state and to Mr. Walters, because we've sued both. And then once that has been given, they have a timeline to respond to us. And that just really starts the process. So we're probably a year, maybe even longer away from like an actual court date to get all the way through the full trial discovery, which is exchanging information phase. But Janessa's got a long road ahead of her, but I know she's strong. She's shown us she is. And we're going to keep fighting the good fight and trying to make sure that, you know, Mr. Walters and unfortunately then the State Department of Education is held accountable for the decisions that they're making. And we're going to at least draw attention to these resources that remain available to some extent and, you know, tell the story, and hopefully we're going to get heard and make a difference. We want to make Janessa whole, but this case is about more than that. You know, it's government overreach, it's censorship, it's so many other things that, you know, it matters not only to Janessa, not only to the students that are losing their mental health resources in schools. There's just so many interested parties that really need to act to rectify the harm that's happening here.
Well, you're on mute again. I hate to tell you, Marianne.
I'm just saying, I don't know what else to add. So,
yeah, I don't either. It's really disheartening though, because, you know, to me, our public schools are sort of the genius of our system. This is the backbone of, you know, our democratic republic this experiment that we've had for 200 and however many years now, 247, whatever it is. My math's not very good today, but, and to see this sort of thing going on. Because, you know, what I'm afraid of is that, you know, over the course of 4 years, which is, you know, sort of the twinkling of an eye historically, but in the lives of kids here in Oklahoma, you know, this could set back a generation of students, I'm afraid.
Yep.
And I'm left wondering what those of us who are not in the system can do to try to help make sure that we get to a healthier point. I'm still waiting for the legislature to develop some backbone on this, because they certainly could flex their muscles where the superintendent and these crazy policies are concerned. So what would you tell rank and file Oklahomans
who care about their
kids in public schools in Oklahoma?
Say that again.
So what would you say to rank and file Oklahomans that they could do
to try
and reduce the carnage?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are still resources out there to help better equip people that work with kids, but even better equip businesses. So there is an organization, DACA, Developing Caring Communities Committed to Action, and the website is www.dccca.org. They provide free youth mental health first aid training to any organization that asks for it, whether it be public schools, coaches associations, churches, daycares, anyone that works with kids, I mean, or has an interest, can request that training for free. They also have mental health first aid training that is the same training, but it's for adults. And so businesses, again, if you want to help empower, you know, your employees, your workforce, this is a training that you could give to them. And really, these trainings are just about helping to recognize some signs of, you know, maybe some mental health challenges, and help connect people with resources and how they can get help. It's not trying to teach anyone how to diagnose mental illness, or we don't expect anyone to become a therapist, you know, in 8 hours of training, anything like that. But it's actually going to help you increase your noticing abilities. And so, especially with like kids, like adolescents and teenagers, it can be easy to be like, oh, they're just a moody teenager or something like that. So it'll kind of help you discern whether it's maybe some developmental, you know, moodiness, or like, oh, maybe I should be concerned about this. Like, and it helps give you some dialogue of how to start a conversation with someone that you may care about, or someone that you may be concerned about, in a way that is non-judgmental, but it comes from a place of care and concern, and hey, let's connect you with some help and support, you know? And so those are some free resources that I highly encourage schools, communities, businesses to take advantage of.
And schools can also apply directly to the federal government for some of these grants, right?
Absolutely. So that was one of the
that was your message to the Edmond School Board.
Yeah, because it just coincidentally happened at a time when, for the first time, SAMHSA had made these grants available for local education agencies. School districts could apply for them directly, so it didn't have to come from a State Department agency anymore. And so I was just informing them, hey, this grant is available for you guys. This could bring $9 million into our school district. Hey, you might want to look into it. I mean, because who doesn't need $9 million?
Well, so, Marianne, what do you think?
It's just a grievous disservice, you know, to our kids and to our families that need that help, so.
You know, when you said a second ago that setting it back 4 years is a blip of time in history, all I can think is 4 years is an entire high school experience for one of our students.
Yeah.
The entirety of their development without those resources. That's such a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I say, you know, it seems to me you're really setting back an entire generation.
Yep.
With this sort of thing. And for a lot of people who are not paying close attention to it, they may wake up on the other side of this and go, how did this happen? It's like, well, it began with situations like Janessa's. And this is how we got to where we are today with this nightmare.
Yep. Yep.
Well, thank you guys for joining us. And I don't envy the long haul ahead, Leah, when you're talking about that, and Janessa, you're living it. It is going to be a long haul ahead. Unfortunately, these things grind slowly, don't they? But
I do, but like life doesn't stop, you know? And so I have to wake up every morning and make the conscious decision to do my best in whatever I'm doing. And so I'm privileged to get to work with kids and serve kids and make those connections and build those relationships that can help, you know, improve their outcomes and send them on a better trajectory in life and be a model for my own children and, you know, help guide them the best I can and be a model in my community. And so that's what I choose to do every day. I can't stop living. I can't stop doing the things that are near and dear to my heart and the things that I know are right and, you know, living my life in a way that I think that I need to. And so it'll be a long haul, but in the meantime, I'm going to do as much good as I can.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Marianne, how we top that with this episode.
Nope. But thank you so much for your time this afternoon. It was a pleasure to talk to both of you so much, and best of luck as this moves forward, and may you be successful.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time and listening to my story.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for helping get the word out there. I think it matters a lot. So appreciate your work too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.